I don't know that they would ever get to that point that I've just described. Because at that point, why don't they just stop it? Here's 8 pages about their latest project, which we hate. There's absolutely nothing requiring you to write about these two. All right? Literally nothing. So why do they? Answer, because they are selling more and more papers by making you hate them. To which the question then becomes, why do you let them do that? I don't hate them because of the newspapers. I don't even read a newspaper. Yeah, come on. What is your knowledge of their behavior based on? How do you know what goes on behind closed doors? Where is that information coming from? You've got a bug, have you? In their Californian sitting room. You've got a top snout, have you? A top source. Their chauffeur rings you up every Tuesday evening and gives you chapter and verse on what it is they've been up to lately. How do you know? Answer, because people who are paid to report on the royal family have put that information, whether it's true or not, into the public sphere. So you rely entirely upon the people who rely entirely upon the palace for their livelihoods. A royal correspondent who is not in favour is not going to be a royal correspondent for very long. Now, I personally don't mind that system in the sense that it is symbiotic. It serves the purposes of both institutions, and they are neither institutions that I have a problem with in principle, either the royal family. Well, actually, probably slightly more of a problem with the royal family because it bakes deference into our system. And although the royal family, most of them, are not problematic. It's a system that allows someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg to masquerade as superior to you, which is obviously absurd. But against the backdrop of a royal family, anybody who walks the walk and talks the talk, however confected it may be, can achieve deference. You have people think, oh yes, he knows what he's talking about. He's got 8 plums in his mouth. Although we're probably going to run out of plums at some point in a not too distant future, if the last hour was anything to go by. So Why do they do it? Why do the newspapers that claim to hate them, and do hate them, and claim to want them to shut up and go away, like Gavin Williamson told the Russians to do after the poisonings in Salisbury? Why do the newspapers that answer it sells papers? What sells papers? Hate sells papers. Who does the hating? The people that read the stories, whether they're getting them from the papers or not. It's all the same trough in which your little noses are immersed. So what's the pleasure? Where's the fun from? Why is it so easy to encourage people to hate these two? Answer, they make you feel really stupid. Whether you realize it or not, I heard some of Nick's callers today, and the levels of anger are absolutely ridiculous. They make you feel really, really stupid. And rather than focus upon how stupid they make you feel, you're going to accept the invitation to get furious. And you know who really feels stupid about them? The newspapers. Because what they've done is simply refuse to dance to the newspaper's tune. Sorry, lads, not having it. Not going to give you pictures of my newborn baby. Not going to, and the newspapers then are not keeping their end of the deal. We're not going to just walk a tightrope of respect and privacy. We're going to treat you like subhuman scum, the way that we write about you, and especially your wife. Your foreign wife with a dark skin. Sorry, pal. You decide to stand up to Fleet Street, then you will suffer the wrath of all of us, especially the people that rely upon the palace for their livelihoods. So why do you hate them so much? Well, because they're selfish and manipulative. And sorry, where are you getting your information from? I'm getting it from the newspapers that they stood up to and refused to be cowed by. Oh, I see. So how many other points in your life have you taken your opinion from the victims of courage? How many times in your life have you let the bullies tell you what to think about the people that they were bullying who stood up to them? So here's a bully. Here's a victim of bullying. The victim stands up to the bully, and you've decided that the bully's version of events must be the one that's true. Not only is the bully's version of events the one that's true, I am now going to join the bullies in pursuing the people that have stood up to them. This isn't black and white. It's not footballification. Nobody's perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But my goodness me, it's a national embarrassment, isn't it? Let's look at the papers. Daily Express, all out war. Now Harry says Palace played dirty games. Ooh. What's the Sun got? Let's have a look at the Sun. Sussex lies and videotape. It's unhinged, this. Get the popcorn in, folks. Daily Star once again doing all right, actually. Daily Mirror, probably the only popular. The Mirror and the Star don't go too bonkers on this. Fact or fantasy? Harry and Meghan in new storm over Netflix show. Daily Mail, fury at Sussex's next Netflix claim of war on Meghan. And on it goes, and on, and on, and on, and on. So if you don't understand the point that I'm making, that's my fault. Let me make it absolutely crystal clear. It is palpably ridiculous for an organ to claim that it wants people to receive less attention while giving them more attention than they currently give to anybody else on the planet. Look at the Mail, right? Netflix versus Riyadh, page one, fury at Sussex's Netflix claim. Page two, the whole thing is one long whinge. There's even commentary from Sarah Vine claiming that they're gaslighting the entire nation. She used to be married to Michael Gove, of course, during coronavirus, so she probably knows a little bit about gaslighting. Page four and five, once again, Harry is attempting to cloak himself and Meghan with Diana's legacy. How dare he reference his mother? Huh, who does he think he is? Pages seven and eight and nine, eight and nine, the surprising reality behind, I mean, that is eight pages, is it? How utterly crackers is it to say that these people are doing something that you disapprove of? But here's eight pages of coverage. So according to the Daily Mail, that is far and away the most important thing happening in this country at the moment. It's a television program on Thursday featuring two people that they claim don't deserve your attention or affection. Eight pages without mentioning the rail strike, without mentioning the food supply threats, without mentioning GPs, without mentioning the NHS. I mean, it's actually breathtaking. It might be seven pages. I seem to have torn one of them out, probably in a fit of fury. So that's not up for debate, is it? Why do they keep writing about these people that they hold in such low regard? Why don't they just ignore them? Because you see the phrase is attention-seeking. They're attention-seeking parasites. Here's eight pages of undiluted attention. You can see that that's insane, right? Even if you've got a really bad case of the four-lot tuggers. So the business model is to make you hate them. If they ignored them, you wouldn't hate them. If they reported them fairly, you wouldn't hate them. The business model is to make you hate them. They count how many copies they sell, according to Front Pages. Not long after I left the Daily Express, the new owner established that if they put Diana Princess of Wales on the front page, they sold 10 or 20,000 more copies than they did on any other day. So they put any old toot on the front page if it contained even a passing reference to Diana Princess of Wales, Prince Harry's mum, of course. And so they know that the bitter, angry, hateful denizens of Middle England who like to think of themselves as patriotic and Christian, your Daily Mail reading matrons, they know eight pages of vitriol and bile directed at Diana's son and his wife. That is great guns. That is jackpot. That is a win. And so my question for you today is this. Why is it so easy to make you hate them, given that every single thing you know about them has come from the people telling you to hate them?
Crazy things I've seen on the internet today. I'm about to show you two different videos of a boat crashing into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. The bridge completely collapsed.
Preventive chemotherapy in the statement, which I think is a very non-medical term. I mean, you don't give chemotherapy preventatively. She has cancer. We don't know what kind of cancer it is. And this is typically something that's referred to as adjuvant chemotherapy, meaning something alongside the surgery now that's being given. But, you know, what stands out to me is that, you know, it's very touching, but we don't know the cancer. We don't know the staging. We did not hear anything from the medical team saying, hey, look, we expect a full recovery. She obviously has said that, but it's there's a lot of questions, I think, that still remain and need to be answered, I think, in some way. You know, these are medications that are typically given in the bloodstream. Sometimes they can be given as a pill orally. If it's given in the bloodstream, then people do typically go to the hospital. Of course, we're talking about the royal family, so I think anything probably is possible for the royal family in terms of doing it more privately. But as Max said, it can be several weeks of these therapies, and they're designed like the basic notion is we did the operation. Now we find cancer. There's likely to be some cancer that is remaining in the body. Let's give chemotherapy to try and target those remaining cells. That's the basic sort of idea behind chemo. But I almost can't say anything more than that because we don't know what kind of cancer, we don't know what stage, we don't know what the chemotherapy is, and we don't know even what type, meaning would she need to be even in an outpatient setting in the hospital.
That's what they're doing now. So, Dr. Ryan, pardon my ignorance on this. If somebody has surgery and then the cancer is discovered after that surgery, is it because tissue from whatever the area of the surgery, in this case, the abdomen, would be taken out and tested? Or would it be, is it possible that it would be cancer somewhere else in the body that would somehow show up in a blood test or something?
Well, with all respect to the, to the royal family, that kind of, press release doesn't make a lot of medical sense. When people undergo extensive surgery, they just don't go in for typically anymore for, quote, exploratory surgery. All of these operations are preceded by extensive imaging, like CAT scans and MRIs. So the surgical team would have a very good understanding of what was likely to be the problem, and that would be confirmed by pathology. So a piece of the tissue removed, whatever the organ is, or the organ removed, or intestine, for instance, that goes directly to the pathology lab, often during the surgery, and sometimes whether something is cancer or not will dictate the extent of the actual operation. So it's very likely that the surgical team knew or had a good sense of what this was going to be prior to surgery, and that was confirmed at the time of pathologic testing during the operation. So this is something that would have at least been suspected before and confirmed during the operation.
For nearly 70 years, I have kept a tradition of speaking to you at Christmas.
Every year, we herald the coming of Christmas by turning on the lights. And light does more than create a festive mood. Light brings hope.
If there is a theme to my message today, it is trust. Trust in what is genuine and what is not.
But at least I still have my beloved Andrew. You are not alone. It seems unlikely.
And let me assure you of my thoughts
and prayers. This is a dangerous time. Moving forward, we need to be more vigilant with what we trust from the internet.
I was perfecting my moves for TikTok. Would you mind awfully? You'll have to move that camera back. Everyone ready?
Everybody, welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast.